Hello and welcome to the Local Economic Development Podcast.
Hosted by Sean Cunningham
and Jörg Meyer-Starmer.
For other programs in this series, please take a look at www.ledcast.net.
In this episode, we are going to talk about social capital. And I'm going to talk with Peter Knorringer, who is with the Institute for Social Studies in The Hague. Hi, Peter.
Hi, Jörg.
So maybe let's start the conversation by looking at where this whole issue of social capital actually came from.
Well, I think in our area of local economic development, it basically comes from the observation that we have all experienced that the relationship of a particular person who knows somebody else makes something happen. And while this is not part of the textbooks, we all know that in reality, particular networks, relations of trust with other people over time and over distance actually plays a very important role in the real business environment.
So that is the way the term social capital is typically used by many people these days. Why are we using this interesting terminology, talking about this as capital?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think 10, 15 years ago, we talked more about networks and the role of trust. I think it has sort of come into also the LED debate after the World Bank has had sort of launched this social capital initiative. And they started to look at these kinds of relationships as resources that one could also use in the economic arena. So there was a sort of idea that you have certain networks and that you use this to make money. And then many social scientists started to sort of complain about this way of looking at it and saying, well, but these people do not actually develop these relationships to make money. They have developed these relationships for all kinds of reasons over time. And then at some point in time, coincidental or not, they can also be used as an extension. They can use them to actually develop their business.
You've been doing some research in recent years around this whole topic of social capital. And one of the things that you have been highlighting there is that there's useful typologies around social capital, different types of social capital. Could you just explain what that is about?
Yeah, in the social capital debate, there is an often used distinction between bonding and bridging social capital, where bonding social capital is the kind of social capital that you share with people that have similar characteristics to your own characteristics. This is like the old boys network from your high school or university days. This is extended family relationships. It could also be ethnic similarities in terms of traders from a particular ethnic group that trade over countries and that have high trust relationships among themselves. The other type is the bridging social capital. This is more the modern business world kind of developing trust, which is based on repeated interactions between businessmen or women that initially did not know each other, but that through experience have started to learn to trust each other. These two types of social capital are quite different in the sense that, for example, the old Italian industrial district stories often start from bonding social capital, where a group of entrepreneurs with a common background actually achieves things for the common good. That might be very strong, but there is also a dark side or a risky side to the bonding social capital because it can easily lead to sort of lock-in or path dependency in terms of that we are all of the same type, we know the same sorts of things, and that doesn't actually get us beyond a certain point. The potential strength of bridging social capital, what Granovetter actually already explained in theory in the 1970s as the strength of weak ties, which is that what really matters in these kinds of networks is not the kind of people that you know that do the same thing, but that you actually have contacts and exchange with people who are related to a different part of the game. And that by having those kinds of contacts, you develop a much stronger chain.
So whenever we are involved in local economic development activities, and especially when we get thrown into new locations or new initiatives, We certainly want to know what exists in terms of social capital, probably both bonding and bridging social capital, because when we find that there is a lot of it around, then we can build on that and launch practical activities very quickly. And when we find that nobody trusts nobody else, then, we probably consider whether it makes sense to work in that location in the first place. So what have you found? What are practical ways of identifying to what extent social capital exists and what kind of social capital exists?
Well, there is a typical problem with that, which is closely related to the sort of optimistic terminology that is often used in the social capital debate, as if we're only talking about the positive side of the story, as if we're only talking about these situations where people actually have relationships of trust and this enables them to actually do things together in a way that is more effective than they would have been able to achieve on their own. The truth, of course, is that there is also plenty of distrust and of negative relationships, and that these are often more difficult to detect, and that when you are the outsider in an LED initiative and you come in and you do your first workshop or kind of events, it is often not so easy to sense and to position the underlying tensions that that exist. But there are ways of actually trying to bring that about. The problem is that none of these things work sort of at the very short run. You need a bit of time to actually, I mean, to learn about the social capital or network or trust things, you need to actually get into that kind of level of discussion with people, which means you have to go with them to the local restaurant or the bar, and you have to start talking about these issues, and you have to sort of use them as resource persons in terms of saying, look, I've been here now for 2 or 3 days and I just cannot understand why this person and that person just don't seem to be able to talk to each other. And if you're lucky and that person trusts you at least enough to do that, he or she may actually start telling you, well, this is goes back 10 years or 20 years and what has happened is this, that, and the other. And this is a sort of slow but sensible way of trying to find out about these things.
So there's quite obviously nothing like, well, say, a thermometer that you can put into a local community and that would indicate, well, the local level of social capital is 55.9.
It is possible that people do these sorts of things, but I wouldn't believe the outcomes. I would take them with more than a grain of salt, actually. I think these things basically don't work. There are often quite strong images related to particular locations about whether or not this is a location where people trust each other and things work here, or this is a location where people have been fighting each other for decades or generations. But I, in that sense, I remember always a very interesting study by Chuck Sable, who once wrote about the very bitter societal clashes in what is now seen as the Third Italy, just before they actually became successful. And he talks there about the amnesia that many of us in studying these things have, that locations that were known for their struggles and antagonism earlier can also, in the next period, be seen then as examples of high trust.
So if it is already not so straightforward to measure social capital, to what extent is it then easy or actually doable to build social capital? If you come in and are supposed to develop a given locality or to help a locality develop itself, what can you do to build social capital?
You can do a number of things, but I think the most important probably is that you have to be very modest about what you think you are going to be able to achieve in that area. The second point is that you need an enormous amount of time. Basically, you cannot limit yourself to a particular budget cycle or project cycle and say, I have to build the trust in this community in the next 12 months or 18 months or 14 and a half months. The third thing is that you need catalytic people. So you need people, preferably, that are not controversial at the local level but are known at the local level, because that helps in terms of them being accepted, who then have the opportunity and the sort of spirit to play the role of the catalyst at local level, performing transparently, openly, and honestly themselves, and trying to engage others in also starting increasingly to that kind of behavior. These are obviously quite generic guidelines, and there are examples of people that have done that relatively successful. However, but this I think is a more general thing with development interventions. Once that person would actually leave, these kinds of initiatives have a tendency to sort of dissolve. So with social capital and trust, it's very difficult to build it, but then it is very easy again to lose it.
So one of the things that some development practitioners suggest to do is basically to get all the stakeholders together around the big table and then let them talk to each other. Is that something that would promise to build social capital?
I'm afraid not, because these sort of grand meetings where everybody is supposed to talk to everybody usually only serve to confirm people in the sort of prejudice they have against the other persons in the room, because these kinds of situations do not allow for actually getting to know the other person in a different way. And that's what it takes to have people to change their mindset about other kinds of people, for example, from the business community or the civil society community or government officials, that they have to start seeing them with new eyes in a different light. And you don't get that through these sorts of meetings where people in a ritual sort of express their own points of view. I have a stronger preference in that sense for relatively smaller, targeted, let's say flagship or quick gain kind of interventions, where you would get a few people from these different groups together and work on something which could show them that they are actually not that different.
Now, if I was a social engineer, what I would be tempted to do is to set up a opportunity where people ought to collaborate, might cheat, but don't cheat. So by avoiding opportunistic behavior in a rather visible way, they would, technically speaking, theoretically speaking, build social capital. However, practically, I think this is not really applicable, or is it?
No, it could be done in simulation game environments, and one could do that as part of an LED or a PACA type of exercise. One could play a prisoner's dilemma game with a group and do this kind of exercises and show, or let's say, challenge people to reveal their preference for non-opportunistic behavior, if you want to put it in more technical terms. But I'm not sure how far that would actually get you when you would go back to saying, okay, now we're going to apply this to the real situation for what we are here for, which is to weld a new local economic development plan. It may be seen as a nice trick or a nice game, but it doesn't necessarily translate into non-opportunistic behavior when it really matters.
So the conclusion then is that in order to build social capital, what you want to do is to develop an organic process, a process that unfolds over time, something that is carefully facilitated and that is, well, professionally managed.
Yes, but of course all of that sounds quite generic, quite general. I think it's possible to add one component to that, something which has often been forgotten in interventions, and that is to, at each step in the process, to keep an open eye or to sort of force yourself to actually consider, have I taken into account the sort of intangible issues of how people relate to each other and who already trusts who and who mistrusts who and why? I think in the sort of more technocratic implementation of projects and programs, as we have seen in the last 30, 40 years in development cooperation, the human element in the process has always been neglected. And by forcing oneself to bring that in and to have sort of a checklist, like, have I made sure that I have been as transparent as possible and as open as possible also towards the groups of people that mistrust the basic idea of this process, even though they still come to our meetings? I think that could help. But what would not help, in my experience, is to have a separate trust-building initiative. So what might work is to be conscious of the trust-building potential of joint activities as you do them, instead of actually having a separate, let's say, social capital formation initiative or something like that. That is probably the least likely way forward.
Great. Thank you very much.
Okay, my pleasure.